What's going on with dance and stuff? What's happening with dance and things? What's going on? What's happening? What's going on with dance and stuff?
Oh, here we are.
Hi.
Hi.
You're in a car. This is unusual.
I'm in a car. You are in your studio.
Where are you going?
We are going to Parker's. We are going.
Oh, that's right. Today is the day. I thought, but somehow I thought it was yesterday.
It was supposed to be yesterday, and then school has begun. So I was in meetings, and then the snow happened, and
it did snow.
And I was just like, I can't do this right now. Like, I was so wiped out. And I mean, not that Jeremy would let me drive the car if we were both in the car together. He prefers safe driving, so he drives.
But just sitting in the car would have been too difficult.
I just couldn't sit in the car yesterday. I just I worked all day, and I think I saw flurries of snow. But I guess it snowed more upstate, and Parker was like, the roads are really slick, and she was like, you might want to rethink it. And I was like, that's fine. I honestly have to like lay down.
Are you outside the bounds of Manhattan or wherever you live, Brooklyn?
We just got outside the bounds of Manhattan. There was an accident with a giant truck. And so we were in like, I would say an hour of traffic. And we just got on the Taconic.
Were you listening to some nice, soothing music?
Yeah, Jeremy has like some great radio station on that was that talk about this and that. It like played PJ Harvey, it played Bob Dylan, it played Celine Dion, it played Empress Of, it played Sia. It was just.
Are you sure it wasn't like a mixtape that he made special for you?
It wasn't a mixtape that he made special for me. It was literally just, I guess he hit like, you know, something on iTunes that's like, play what I like. And
play what I like.
Play what I like. Though Jeremy and I have recently started to make up songs in the apartment and sort of scream sing them at each other. Because it's that point of lockdown where now, we're getting right to the point of Cornhusk Dolls.
Yeah, you guys are doing UCB improv group right at the apartment.
Tea, honey, absolutely. Singing songs, improv, you know, all that jazz. I've also heard him, I have heard sections of the Pam Tanowitz film for the library at least 250 times.
Oh, nice.
I could probably, like, quote the entire presentation and sing the songs that play behind it.
Well, I'm so excited to go this Friday when this podcast comes out.
As this podcast is airing, you can run on over to the Zoom room of the New York Public Library of the Performing Arts Floor.
Yeah, get yourself a free ticket. And Pam's not till 4 p.m. EST, so go see the show.
Yeah, if you're listening to this in the morning, you have all the way until, you know, 4 p.m.
And if you're listening in Europe, you have no excuse. And if you're listening in Australia, it's literally yesterday. So you can watch it. You can watch it.
Yeah. Wait, Australia's yesterday? It's today? Wait.
Australia's a day ahead. They're
in front. It's in front. So doesn't that mean that when they hear this, it's Saturday? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know, actually. Do you think that they still get it on Friday, even if it's their Friday?
I don't know. Australian friends, let us know. Do you hear this on Friday or Saturday?
Well,
my guess is you hear it on Saturday.
I was having some existential thoughts about the podcast as I walked home yesterday from studio.
Will you please tell me your existential thoughts about our podcast?
Well, I did think, what
are we doing?
What are we doing? Uh-huh. I did think that.
Uh-huh.
I did think that, and I thought, for the somewhere between 30 and 1,000 listeners, you know, nobody knows.
Right.
And and to be honest, you know, there's no way of knowing unless you're Jeremy and know how to look at the numbers. But you and I don't know how to do that.
Mm-mm. No, we don't.
So we don't know who's listening. And those people who I know, the people I know who are listeners, I don't think they listen anymore. They don't listen anymore. Except I think maybe Justin Peck listens. I know Russell doesn't listen anymore. I think Stuart has also stopped listening.
I literally had someone last night tell me that they just listened to the inauguration episode and that their boyfriend really loved him. So,
Well, that's really nice. That's really nice. We need to let us know if you're listening, because it is like Jack and I are doing this. Well, what I've realized is that what you and I do each week, this is what I've decided for myself.
Okay.
To give it a purpose.
Okay.
Is that it's an exercise in kind of conversation in the context of having really nothing to say, quite frankly. So, do you know what I mean? And that's an exercise.
I am dead. I have to tell Jeremy this. Reed was trying to figure out like what this podcast is. The listeners are just going to hear this repeated now. And he realized in having a conversation when you have nothing to say. And,
yep.
Yeah, and you know,
For an hour.
Well,
do you know what I mean?
Well, thank God
hour.
We've given
it's hard
ourselves.
Work.
I think, well, we've given ourselves an hour cutoff. So I actually think that frequently you and I can talk. I mean, we know that, like, I, in the past, have gone to, like, wrap up an episode, and then you've been like, oh, I have to tell you about this umbrella. Or just something.
It's true.
That, like, you'll just bring in, like, some kind of topic that will then put us into a new paragraph. And I want to honor that. I mean, for me, when I thought, what are we doing? I really thought about in the beginning that you were like, we'll do this every week. And I was like, ugh. Uh-uh. And then...
Wait, is this like 3 years ago, you
this
mean?
This is 3 years ago. And I thought, no. And then I thought, well, what if you just committed to Reed and accepted that and just did it? And I think for me, it's also a thing of an exercise of, well, there's times maybe you don't want to do something and you just do it anyway. And there does seem to be a lot.
When I think about how you have pushed through in the various states of mind that you've been in the last 3.5 years, I cannot believe there are weekly episodes. I can't believe it. Oh my God. It's way more shocking after the fact. To recall just walking into your apartment to record, which seems like 100 years ago,
uh-huh,
a thing
absolutely.
We used to do.
Uh-huh.
Because now we both, you know, face our separate devices in separate parts of the world. But to
totally,
walk into
like
your apartment
in a car,
with you,
maybe.
Oh, sure, in a car, me staring at a cinder block wall in my studio. But to walk into your apartment and you would just break down in tears before we'd even started recording. And I thought, well, what are we going to talk about today? And somehow it would work itself out.
I know. Those were harrowing.
Oh, dear.
I did
I'm losing you, Jack.
You're losing me? No.
Jack.
Yes.
I hear you now.
Okay. Well, look, here's the deal. Like, this is a taconic drive. It means I'm going to cut in and out. Like, and
that's great. I'll tell stories when you cut out.
If I cut out, tell any story that comes to mind.
Actually, you know what would be amazing?
What?
When you cut out, let's just promise each other we won't turn off our recordings, but we'll just keep talking, and then both recordings can be laid over one another, and it can just be like... it can be a harmony of our gorgeous voices incongruously talking about whatever.
Completely. Jeremy, so you know, if we cut out on each other, we're just going to keep recording and just layer it. Doesn't matter.
Don't cut it. It's modern art.
Don't cut it. Modern art. It's conceptual. It's minimal. It's Chance Operations. It's
oh my god, Merce is so winking from heaven.
It is. What's another one that I really liked? People talk about chance-based operation. It's task-based. This is a task-based podcast.
It's also collage. One could call it collage.
One could call it durational.
Absolutely.
It is. Jeremy says experimental. I love that. Yes, experimental.
If anything,
avant-garde.
It's nothing if it's not experimental and avant-garde.
Honey.
Okay, what were we talking about? Why we make
why
this
we do this? I think other feedback I've gotten has been an appreciation of queers just being queers. And, you know, this is, we live in a time of, I cannot remember the name of this guy who wrote a book on creative, on dramatic structure, and then he wrote another book that was on creative writing, and
yes, I know, Roald Dahl.
Can you imagine? Yeah, that's right. He wrote, after he wrote The Witches, he,
it was Stephen King.
I love Stephen King so much. I just, literally last night was talking about Pet Sematary. You ever seen Pet Sematary?
You know, I can't bring myself to watch a movie like that.
Oh, Reed, you should watch the original because there's this, like, sister narrative that will really haunt you in this way that I also think, like, if you would have seen it when we were kids, you and I, if we would have seen it around the same time, you would have been like, Rachel, and you would have, like, absolutely been, pretended to be the sister. I think she has, like, spinal meningitis, and she, like, haunts the female protagonist. Pet Sematary is an incredible movie. I didn't see the remake.
Keep recording, and, Jack.
I'm going to have to try and call Reed back right now. Just full dropped.
Well, I'm still talking. Works. I'm calling Jack back because I ended the call accidentally. But we're going to be right back on track
Reed.
In a minute. I hope Jack's talking.
Oh, Reed's calling me. Here, there you
I hope
were
you kept recording.
Me. I did. I kept recording.
You kept because this is our conceptual art project. And you know what happened? I ended our phone call by... I touched my earbud, and it has these, like, touch controls.
Oh, so it was you who ended the phone call. It wasn't even us. It wasn't even, like, the drive.
I did.
It was that you touched your earbuds and ended it.
Uh-huh.
This is also
correct.
Something. I think this podcast is also, for listeners, maybe an exercise in frustration. So
well,
that,
do you think they're frustrated or we're frustrated? I think we're a lot more frustrated than them.
Oh, I bet when you talk about how you have these friends of yours who've stopped listening to the podcast, my guess is that they might be frustrated.
He's broken up. I can't really hear Jack anymore.
And in that frustration...
That's okay. I imagine he's still talking to me
decided,
about frustration.
You know,
maybe he doesn't know that I
can't
that hear
I'm frustrated
him
by
right now.
I can't hear Reed at all.
And I hope
at
we're making
point.
Beautiful music.
Oh,
I hear
look,
you again.
We're back. You know, so I think there's also something that Jeremy is shaking his head. It's a real... I do want to bring up, though, ladies, gentlemen, and other, frustration is the aura of the real. And so when you hit that feeling and you have this sense of frustration and you're in this thing of the aura of the real, well, you're left with then, well, if this is reality, what do I want to make of it? And, for example, right now, I can't hear Reed at all. We're clearly...
No, you can hear me. I can hear you.
Oh, you're here.
Sometimes I actually just listen to you. Can you imagine?
Oh, I can't, actually. I can't imagine they
you
are ever just listening
about
to me.
The aura of the real.
Yes, frustration is the aura of the real. So when you're frustrated,
that's
you're
right.
Right next to the real. And then when you hit reality, you think, well, what do I want to make of it? For you and I, what you... And I have decided, and in terms of this mass, seemingly government-sanctioned death in the terrorism called capitalism, we've decided to have this podcast be wherever we find ourselves that week.
Yes.
And
well, we don't really have a choice.
Well, we absolutely could just not do this.
That is the alternative, yes.
That's the choice.
But somehow that feels like a failure, and I don't know why, but in my heart, that's a failure.
Aw, well, if it feels like a failure in your heart, then I'm willing to continue to renegotiate the terms. And, you know, it's true. Like, my God, the fact that we got all those episodes done when we think about me in 2019
is so crazy.
Incredible. We interviewed people. Not only that, but like we did video where I was like in front of the camera. Like,
it's true. Like, maybe it kept you alive.
It felt like a burden. But maybe things that feel like a burden keep me alive.
Well, that's what life is. It's just like this series of burdens that keep you walking, you know, keeps you putting one foot in front of the other to get to the next burden.
I don't know. I've realized that I'm really comfortable with discomfort. And that actually
I think I'm not. I love being comfortable.
Yeah, I think that's what I've been unpacking for myself as of late is this sort of, where is the addiction to being uncomfortable? Where is the addiction to trauma, to pain? When does it become addictive? When does it just become perseverative? I mean, you have certainly been on my case about that since I was 16. So, you know, now that it's, you know, 50 years later, I think I'm thinking about it.
Interesting. Wow.
You know, I'm stubborn.
There's a lot of stuff going on.
Reed, there's always a lot of stuff going on with me. You know that. You know that.
That's, I do.
That's how you and I get to come together. You're like, I like pancakes. And I'm like, I had a feeling about a feeling that I'm going to have to unpack the third narrative of the next feeling that came in to get to the origin feeling. And when I get to that, we're going to have to talk. Yeah.
Right. Wow. Yeah. It's different. I mean, today I have, just my experience of today has been so, has been profound for me only because it's basically the only thing I can remember. Because before today is, you know, is hazy. Hazy.
You are my little goldfish girl. You are just
but gosh, I can tell
like,
you about today.
I'm here now. Okay, well, what did you do today? What was today?
Okay, let me think. Let me get back to early. I had school this morning. So I woke up and I made coffee and then I sat down and I had Jesse Zaret's graduate seminar class for 2 hours. And we talked about a kind of ethics code that we wanted to participate in the classroom environment, which for us at UArts isn't so imperative because we have like a very, we have good vibes, but it was interesting to think about coming from someone else who'd written up this list of imperatives. And so we're going to make a list for our own selves that will be a revision of this list we looked at today. But anyways, cool. I'll send you the one Jesse sent us because it was interesting to think
about. I think having guiding principles is good.
Yeah, creating. For how we listen to each other, how we treat each other, how we center each other. Yeah.
Class needs to have a container and boundaries.
Yeah. And then I got myself ready to go to studio, and I had this whole plan, which was that, well, I did. I went to Uniqlo because, for the 1 millionth time.
Can you say
that
again?
I finally went to Uniqlo. Uniqlo.
I know, but I really loved the way you said it the first time. I went to Uniqlo. It was really...
I thought you couldn't hear me, so then I started yelling.
No, it was that you really eat the uni. I went to Uniqlo. Yeah, as if unique.
Uniqlo.
Unique New York, and then you said Uniqlo.
Unique New York, right, Clo. Right. But at any rate, as you know, I've been in this long and drawn out...
Coat saga.
Coat Saga, and I finally am at the end of it. I am almost at the end of it.
Better work.
Where I now have the overcoat portion, which is, you know, one of the collaborative Christophe Lemaire pieces that looks like packing blankets. And then I realized I needed to have an underlayer as well with a hood, because I want a hood. So I bought two different of their nylon parkas, one in this weirdo green color and one in this kind of bronze caramel color. And then last night I got those two in the mail, so I tried them both on and I had a session with Harriet where we decided which one I would keep. And with Harriet, we decided I would keep the caramel colored one to keep the whole coat situation in a more tonal environment.
Okay.
So the green one needed to be returned. So I, this morning after class, I set off to Uniqlo with my green thing. And I got up to the desk and I said, I'd like to return this garment. She said, oh, we're actually, you have to put
ship
that in the mail to return.
Yes, that's correct.
And I said, I was stunned to silence for a moment. I looked at her and she was like, yes, since last October, we've started a policy where you cannot do online returns in store. And I was like, oh, well, then I guess all I'm doing today is buying some gloves. So I bought some $7 gloves. And I thanked her, and I left with the package that I had come in with, and I felt sad and stunned. And, you know, it's not right. These stores are meant to take online returns.
No, they're not meant to take online returns because, like, you know, they get to do whatever they want. And it's, what I appreciate in this story, you know, is I couldn't help but hear it in the sort of like context of 20,000 people dying every week, and there was something very, I don't know, it was a really good story. Like, I would love you to write this story of returning a parka in this height of just like a landslide of death. It's a good story. It's very Camus-esque, I have to say.
It has it. Well, you know, the numbers are getting a lot better, Jack.
We'll see.
Yeah. But at any rate,
I left
Uniqlo thinking, God, I don't want to go to a post office, you know?
No, but I do remember when you went to a post office and you had to, like, toss the package through meat flaps, and I think you had a good time.
Yeah, well, I have been to post office several times since then, but I just, you know, even under the best circumstances, I don't want to go to a post office.
I'm amazed that you'd rather go to Uniqlo than a post office.
I'd honestly rather go to a post office. Because I had to send my dad's mail to Japan.
Reed and I have lost each other again. Oh, no, you're back. Okay, go on.
Oh, well, so then I continued my journey to Abrams, and I opted to walk along Delancey. And at a certain point, as I was crossing a thoroughfare, I rolled over my left ankle on a pothole that was literally as big as a pot. And
ankle of yours, that trick left ankle.
Well, the both of them, quite frankly. But as can happen, this one was more shocking than usual because I did feel the entire side of my foot slam into the ground with such velocity that I was like, I thought, if I look at my foot right now, what will I see? You know?
Did you do it?
Will the bones just be rattling out of the hole? You know what I mean? And it was, you know, I just kept walking and it was fine somehow. But all I kept imagining was like that the inside of my ankle at this point is just like a gumball machine. It's just like floating stuff.
Did you wrap it at all, or just you were like, I'll just keep going and it's fine?
I kept going. It's literally totally fine. I have no swelling and no pain.
The gumbiness of you is really so incredible. Another place where you and I are incredibly different. My bone would have just broken.
I believe that to be true, actually.
We have proof of it. You sprained your ankle at that wedding, and then a few weeks later, I broke my foot. like basically doing the same thing.
Well, that was a real, for me, that was an actual real ankle sprain because of swelling and pain, you know.
This one, you sprained it, but it just like went back into place, and then you probably, by just not thinking about it, it didn't swell.
Yeah. Anyways, then I got to studio and I've been working out this leotard pattern that has not been going well.
Sorry.
And my industrial surgery's been giving me grief. And so all in all, a challenging day at studio. And for the last couple of days, they've been moving all these like rolls of paper and muslin away from the radiator, which I'm like, okay, why? They've been there for 6 years, no problem. And then yesterday, after this, you know, tug of war of me constantly moving things back, they finally put a sign above it that said, caution, wet paint.
Oh.
And I said, now I'm certain there's no paint anywhere, you know?
Oh, wow.
So I touched all the surfaces, no paint. But then I came in today, wet paint.
Oh, so also in your studio has been painted?
Well, just the metal radiator cover.
Wow, so you came into the studio to having the radiator on full blast with wet paint on it and those fumes just in your completely unaerated box.
Well, the doors open to my studio because of the drying paint.
Okay, but still, do you know what I mean? I have a question. When you're in your studio, do you keep your mask on?
No, I shut the door, generally.
You shut the door and then take your mask off, right? Okay.
That's right.
That seems correct.
Yeah, it seems fine.
Like
nobody's
apartment or
nobody's
anything.
Put up a fuss. Yeah.
No. Where is Harriet?
And, you know, California.
Wow. So it's so then you guys Zoom with each other?
Yeah.
And
we've been doing a lot of FaceTiming to work out the details of various jobs. And, yeah, it's fine. I mean, we're not really doing any production right now. I'm just kind of, like, working out little things.
Right. Right. Well, I have two upcoming things for you.
Wonderful.
I know. I know, right? Yes, today was work. And then lots of meetings and final tweaks of the syllabi and then getting on the road. And it is completely pitch black now at, you know, 6 p.m. And we're just driving. I didn't have that same kind of taxing day that you had of trying to return things and that not happening. I do have a severe headache, though, right now, but that's okay.
You have a headache?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's fine.
Why?
I think probably because I was staring at, like, the screen for a long time while being in different faculty meetings. And I'm probably dehydrated, but we press on.
I'm drinking something you'd really like right now. I'm drinking a Pink Lady Apple Health Aid Kombucha.
Oh, I wish I had a kombucha right now. I do love a kombucha. I don't have that in front of me. What else? Oh, you know what? You know who I really love?
What? Who?
Jennifer Lawrence. We watched
the
this,
actress.
Like, yeah, we watched like this 1 minute kind of behind the scenes of her Vogue photo shoot. From years ago, it was like 1 minute of her just like telling jokes.
Uh-huh.
And she was so funny. And then I watched another one where she came out on the street, would go up to people and go, can you tell me 5 Jennifer Lawrence films? And like no one could do it. And she came out and she goes to this woman, she goes, can you tell me 5 Jennifer Lawrence films? She goes, Jennifer Lawrence. And she goes, I know, she's gross, right? She's like, yeah. And she goes, yeah, who did Brad Pitt used to be with? What's her name? Jennifer something.
Are you asking me?
Yeah, I'm asking you.
Aniston.
Yeah, and the woman goes, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I like Jennifer Aniston. And she's like, oh, yes, Jennifer Aniston is much more beautiful than Jennifer Lawrence. And she's like, absolutely. She's like, and such a better actress. Jennifer Lawrence, just so stupid and ugly. I hate her. She's like, yeah, yeah. And then she goes, I'm Jennifer Lawrence. And the woman's like, oh. And then, like, Jennifer Lawrence goes and jumps on, like, a tour bus to, like, ask them questions about, like, movies she's been in, and they're freaking out. And she's like, she finishes, and she goes, I noticed that, like, these buses come by my home. So if you see someone in a Tesla flicking you off, that's me. She's really funny.
She seems nice. I like her.
Yeah, I really like her. I'm really.
I mean, that she and Amy Schumer have a friendship. I think that's a good sign.
What I was really shook by, there's been a lot of Jeremy watching YouTube on the TV. Really, it's become like a pet passion. And so there's been a lot of watching like the 73 questions from Vogue. And
I don't like those.
Well, they're very scripted. It's clear that they're scripted have had like at least one walkthrough.
What do you mean? It has to have been more than one walkthrough. They're so ridiculous.
Well, celebrities, I couldn't picture a celebrity being like, I'll walk through it once and then we can do it. You know what I mean? Like, celebrities don't want this to take up more time than like.
Do you think that the cameraman has cue cards?
For the celebrity?
Yeah, do you think that the celebrities actually memorized all their answers, or do you think that they have some reference?
They might have some reference. I don't know. I really liked watching Lizzo's because it actually did feel that she would surprise herself with some answers, which I liked.
Lizzo?
Hers felt spontaneous and playful.
You're cutting
Amy
out. Are you
Adams's
talking about Lizzo?
Really did not. Lizzo.
Wait, Jack. Lizzo. Okay. I love
Lizzo.
Oh, I don't hear Jack. Does Jack
hear
me?
Reed, I can hear you.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I hear Jack now.
Who do you think I said?
Lizzo?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll watch Lizzo's.
The one that I felt super scripted and crazy was Amy Adams. She does like a huge, she's like super Gumby, stretchy. And then lace up red point shoes, but then she doesn't do anything in them.
Oh, you know, I've seen this. She's like getting ready for her photo shoot for Vogue where she's wearing point shoes.
Oh, okay. Well, I was like, I would have loved to have seen her like just, you know, do like a pirouette, but you know, whatever.
I mean, I don't think that would have been in the realm of possibility.
But she has all this dance training, so I think she could.
I don't know. Well,
she's very flexible in like a crazy way. But what I realized in watching it was there is a huge like oversight in that her and Kristen Wiig haven't played sisters.
Yeah, that would be correct visually for sure.
It is the same. It's the same. Like, I was like,
well, now that Kristen Wiig has done something to her face, we're going to have to wait for it to calm down a bit.
It still works. It's just the sister. Yeah. It's just, you know, that's my part.
You know, yeah. I thought that in terms of doing like genetic similarity casting, they did a really good job with Silver Linings Playbook by casting Julia Stiles as Jennifer Lawrence's older sister.
Oh, that's interesting. So I never saw that movie because I don't like Bradley Cooper.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Find him hard to take. Not as hard to take as, let's say, Matthew McConaughey or, like, Christian Bale or Jared Leto.
Oh.
Like, those people.
Wow, those are all such different people.
But the same. Do you know what I mean?
Like, but Matthew McConaughey is just, like, what's good about him is that he's kind of always himself, you know? Whereas, like, Jared Leto and Christian Bale think that they're very fine actors, though they're just completely unbearable.
Totally.
And then Bradley Cooper is like, I'm really, like, smart and educated, and, like, I'm
gay,
very privileged, and I'm kind of curious, but also, like, I'm not particularly talented, but Hollywood's going to adore me. And they
Hollywood adored Bradley Cooper, absolutely, and does adore him, and whatever.
He seems nice, you know?
Sure, sure. I just
He's
don't know.
He's making a movie about, well, I don't know if I should, well, I don't know if I can say that.
Oh, because you know someone who's involved in it, and they've signed an NDA.
Right. I'm sure it's known in the industry, and I just don't, I don't read the rags.
You don't read the trades, so the trade papers?
I don't read the trade.
You know,
what's
read Variety?
The rags?
Variety.
Yeah, I don't read
Variety is pretty much the big one. You know, that's where you're like, oh my God.
Right. I haven't seen, I need to see a movie. You know, I need to look. Oh, this also happened today.
Okay.
Or was it last night? Nobody knows. I watched a preview, excuse me, for basically Still Alice, but gay.
Huh.
And I almost couldn't get to the end of the trailer because it was so sad.
Who are the actors?
Well, they've done this incredible thing by casting two of the most appealing middle-aged straight actors in Hollywood to play this couple.
Uh-huh.
Can you guess?
I feel so fatigued in hearing that they've cast straight actors to play a gay couple that my mind kind of... I, like, blacked out behind my eyes.
One of them, I'm not positive they're straight, but I think so.
Like George Clooney?
Not that level of fame, but, like, more appealing.
Peter Skarsgård?
Interesting. No, but...
I don't know. You know me and Matt.
Okay.
Just who is it?
Stanley Tucci.
Uh-huh.
Do we think he's straight?
Well, he says so.
Oh, but so. He's very theater, so you just never
yeah.
know.
Totally.
And Colin Firth.
Uh-huh.
And watching the trailer for this movie, like, the trailer begins and you think, oh, this is going to be like a charming... rom-com about middle-aged gays who are, you know, reasonable, and then suddenly it turns into a Still Alice plot, and you're like, oh no.
Who's the one who's Still Alice?
Stanley Tucci.
Oh, the funny one.
And he's really like, we're gonna go on a trip and see family, and I don't want you to feel like I'm a burden on you, and you're like, oh no, this is sad.
Look,
but at any rate.
I love Stanley Tucci. I love Colin Firth. You know, it's this, the idea of diversity in Hollywood is still a new concept for them and I guess everywhere. And so it is what it is.
Oh, Jack. Oh, you're back. You're back. Jack is back.
Did I break up again?
Oh.
What, Reed?
He's choppy. Oh, you're back. You're back.
Yeah, I'm here.
What I would say to that is I think that because we don't have a huge number of openly gay Hollywood actors,
right?
I think it's good to have like a mainstream film depicting kind of mundane middle-aged gay people portrayed by very famous Hollywood actors to mm-hmm. to normalize it, and I think that's good.
I fully hear that part of that, absolutely. I mean, this was the
Jack
you know when
agrees.
What did you say?
You're chopping out. I think I was saying that I think Jack fully agrees.
Well, I said I fully hear you on that.
Oh, you hear me.
I didn't necessarily say that I fully agree, but I guess contextually with what we're in, I accept. Let me say that.
Okay.
I accept it.
Great.
I accept
great,
it.
Great,
and
great.
It's, you know, I think even having a story that centers on a gay couple going through something that other people go through is great, is fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, this was the
Do you,
go ahead.
Would we prefer to see the movie with like Neil Patrick Harris and Kevin Spacey?
That,
absolutely not.
That, now come on, come on. You didn't need to do that. You didn't need to be homophobic. That's crazy.
That was homophobia.
Yeah, you can't like suggest Neil Patrick Harris and Kevin Spacey. It's crazy, right? You're so crazy. I mean, this was part of the debate, right? Or this still happens, and this happens on college campuses when Boys Don't Cry comes up to be shown, and people are upset that Brennan Tina is played by a cis straight woman. And, you know, but the truth of that movie is that she looked for 2 years to find a trans actor to do the role, and no one would do it. No one there. She couldn't find anyone. She wanted to get the story out. And
right.
So, and that was where it was at that time. I think, you know, what, you know, when I say it's hard that, wow, we're in 2021 and, you know, this is as far as we've gotten. And then I also think, well, Trump just did leave the office. So what am I talking about? You know, it's like, right, how far who's gotten? Where, you know, and I'm going to like grab the low hanging fruit of Hollywood and the arts when the government is like literally just exited a full like Nazi brigade, kill everyone now who like everybody go to work. It's
right.
So contextually, you know, there's that. I can't just pretend that art can magically exist in some special castle and then everyone will be changed by that. And in this other way, I think there is a great counter argument by these actors. It might help people who would just simply not be open to the queer narrative take it in. So,
yeah.
You know, maybe that's
because who can resist Colin Firth or Stanley Tucci? We love that.
Who could resist them? I was really hoping when you said Colin that you were going to say Colin Farrell. And I was like, I'm there. I'm all the way there.
I mean,
but that's because I also, he's got to be fluid. Like he's, come on.
That's your dream? That's your dream for him?
Oh, well, I don't know. I've heard some stuff. So what am I saying? Look, what I'm saying here is that I've been with Colin Farrell. And
yeah. No, we know that.
We dated for 15 years.
I read it in the trades.
You read it in Variety. We canceled our wedding when Martha got involved. Go ahead.
Who's Martha?
Stewart. What other Martha would ever be involved in anyone else's wedding? Graham?
I see. Martha Plimpton. Also, speaking of closeted homosexuals, have you watched any of this Heaven's Gate documentary on HBO?
Oh, I watched the first episode, and it felt like every single cult documentary I've ever seen, and so I just couldn't keep going.
Well, it's incredibly, incredibly boring as a documentary goes, but...
Also, like, I was alive for when it was happening, and I, like, remember it on the news, and, like...
Yeah.
That was exciting, and this is, this just feels, it feels a little dry.
Well, it's so, it does kind of illuminate to one that it's really such a small step, these, like, cult ideologies, one tiny step away from Christianity. I mean, or not a step at all. Just a difference.
I'm not even going to say that's not a step. It's just different.
Right. I mean, because like the Heaven's Gate people, it was Christianity. They were just like relanguaging it to include technology, like UFOs and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Love it. I mean, that literally is Scientology. You know, it's
The
whole thing of like the theons.
The way that they got these people to just walk away from their children, that was what really shocked me.
How old were those people when they walked away from their children?
Well, one of the couples had a 10-year-old daughter.
And how old was she?
Who?
The woman who walked away. She had a 10-year-old daughter, and I'm curious how old was she?
I don't know, but somewhere between 30 and 40.
Okay. I mean, somewhere inside of... I go back to the thing in Ferrante's Neapolitan novels that she begins a section called Old Age. I think in either book two or book three, and it's called Old Age, and it starts when the protagonists are 35. So, you know, I think also the midlife crisis is hits early if you're a trauma survivor, and I think that's also part of what happens with cults, right, is that it's a place where survivors think there's another way, and so I guess I'm not surprised at the walking away of the children, a job,
a
spouse.
I'm surprised. Because it's one thing to, like, walk away from a child and a spouse, sort of, like, leave your child with the other parent. But for two parents, a whole family unit, to step away from their daughter forever with no communication and to just leave her with the grandparents and say, we no longer exist to you. That's not understandable to me. That's truly, like... Wow, you've had a psychotic break.
Yes, they have. But the psychotic break, you know, it's like, as they say with relapse and drinking, the drink is the last part of the relapse. So when these people join the cult, that's the last part of a line of dominoes that have been coming for a while.
Right.
And, I think that's sort of where they continue. I'm guessing. I think there's many reasons people are continually fascinated by these cult stories, but part of them is the fantasy of doing something so outside of society, and
it's so weird. It's
and that
so
also,
weird.
I think there's a well, especially if you consider our society as a capitalist juggernaut, to have people seek community and not participate in the daily grind of the supremacist patriarchy, it's a real kind of like, oh, well, we understand that fantasy. We understand, or rather that desire.
But, you know, like, I don't know.
I guess
that's
what I would say.
My mind cannot be... I can't even, like, I can't empathize with these young people who, like, went to go listen to a talk by some, like, closeted musical theater BFA and his registered nurse fake wife who are obsessed with The Sound of Music, and then have them tell me, like, come with us, we're going to get on a spaceship and ascend to heaven. And
Reed,
then
you are absolutely
like,
the last. A cult couldn't suck you in unless it was truly like some kind of strange, like I think of like if Make House had somehow gotten some kind of culty vibe where like people had designated roles and you were all going to get to hang out together in an egalitarian way where. There may be some intimacy now and then, board games, dancing, singing,
You found my weakness. You did it.
Yeah. So someone was like, "Oh, I have this thing," and we're gonna live in it's this house in Vermont, and it's just a way to really. It's based on the artist's way. We're going to, you know, and he would be like, I'm going to like go out there. And I could absolutely imagine being like, bye. You know, but otherwise, no, this is, you can't. Also, if something had like spirituality in it or they were like,
then
there's this God thing or aliens, you'd be like, no, you are completely Scully. And, You know,
X-Files.
I'm Mulder and you're Scully.
I just can't.
Which bums me out, because I want to be Scully, but you are definitely the one who's like, there's got to be a reason.
Look, maybe like, maybe they're laughing at us from heaven, because maybe when they, you know, killed themselves, they really did get on a spaceship and, like, go to heaven.
Have you ever heard Jimmy Scott cover the Talking Heads' Heaven?
Of course not.
Oh, it's so good. Heaven is a place where nothing ever happens. I mean, that's the Talking Heads, but hearing Jimmy Scott sing it is really it. I once drove to Bard listening to it on repeat for the entire 2.5-hour drive while crying.
Wow. And, what are you crying about?
My life. You know, it was in 2019, so it was just sort of like the full... It was, you know, it was like grieving, trauma, being re-traumatized, being assaulted again, like all of it. And then just listening to this song of someone singing about heaven is a place where nothing ever happens. I was like, that is really something fierce. Like it began by me listening and laughing and then I was crying and, you know. Just another manic drive up the Taconic. Wee!
I'm trying to think if I have anything dance related to share.
I do. I showed Jeremy some celebrities who are good at dancing, and someone who is such a great dancer is Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And, Joseph Gordon-Levitt's cold open for SNL when he did this sort of Magic Mike number, and it was just really kind of hot. I think it came out in 2012, and I had forgotten about it, and we rewatched it, and yeah, it was good. He's a good dancer.
Yeah,
hips that can really move.
I think I saw him do a Janet Jackson lip sync battle.
He did the lip sync battle. Yeah. That's when they did Rhythm Nation.
He's very cute to me.
What did you say?
I said he's very cute to me.
Yeah, he's cute to me too. I think Joseph Gordon-Levitt is sort of cute for everyone. You know who else is an incredible dancer? Is Sid Charisse. You just killed me. I really wish you'd have been like Suzanne Farrell. Is the boy who plays Spider-Man, the new one.
Oh, yeah, Tom Holland.
Yeah, because you should watch his lip sync battle. You'll lose your mind.
I saw that.
Did you lose your mind?
Well, no, I'm still here. You know, I'm still here.
Yeah, yeah. But in the moment, were you impressed by him doing like his... Well, he does like a big flip onto his back. He does like a huge flip that lands on your back with like a knee bent. I mean, she's clearly clipped.
He was Billy Elliot.
Yes. Well, first he was a friend and then he was Billy Elliot, but yes.
Channing Tatum. Channing Tatum do Beyonce, Girls, We Run the World, and then Beyonce comes out and joins him.
I don't think I've seen that, but Channing is certainly a wonderful dancer. You know, that tap dancing he does in that film I didn't see was the first time he'd ever done tap. And he did an incredible job.
Oh, that Coen Brothers period comedy about Hollywood?
Yes, that Coen Brothers period comedy.
You know, I saw some of that, or maybe even all of it, and possibly on an airplane.
You know, have you seen Pennies from Heaven yet?
No, maybe that's my next movie.
Reed, I've talked about it with you enough that I'm not going to do this podcast again until you watched it.
Well, look, it took me 10 years to watch opening night, and I did it, and I loved it.
Well, now I've given a deadline, which is I'm not doing the podcast if you haven't watched Pennies from Heaven.
Well, I appreciate that, actually. I like assignments.
Well, there's your assignment. You have to watch it, because when you watch Steve Martin and Bernadette Peters dance, you're going to be like, what? It is, and the movie is so twisted and bizarre, and it has the actress from the original Suspiria in it.
Oh, wow.
She has my favorite line in the entire movie.
Bad acting in Suspiria. What? What's the line?
I believe it's cut its dick off.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, now I don't know what this movie's about.
You won't. That's the thing about this movie. It's a surprise. In terms of dance, do I feel I have other things to talk about? There's stuff in the works, so I can't really say.
I have a dance thing I can say. I mean, it's not really, but I had a lovely FaceTime with Patricia Delgado and Justin Pack the other day, and we spoke while they prepared dinner. And Justin has chin length hair, maybe a little longer than chin length right now, and he had it pulled half back like one of the Lord of the Rings elves.
Yes.
And I really thought I couldn't get enough. I just was like, Justin.
Oh, that's so good.
I feel so attracted and so intrigued and wow.
Well, please ask him to take a selfie to post for this week of his hair like that. Justin, if you're listening, don't touch that hair. Everyone who's been growing your hair out during COVID, leave it. Leave it. A long hair is in. This is the time for it just happening. And
are you gonna do yours? Are you gonna go back to your old Mark Morris? What have you?
No. I mean, my hair is growing out, but it's growing out in this like thing I'm doing. This sort of, I'm giving myself like the haircut from Raised by Wolves. So it's yeah. I'm giving myself the haircut of the model blonde boy.
Gorgeous. You guys have essentially the same hair, so
that, show,
that stands to reason.
Like, that anyone was upset with Twin Peaks season 3 and not upset with Raised by Wolves is literally beyond me. It's just...
Well, you know, there's no reason to be upset by any of it. Just watch it if you want, and don't if
that
you don't.
Is it, literally it. There's no
there
reason to be
upset. Literally
things
that you can just push stop, you know, and go have dinner.
Venmo is the best television.
Veneno is a wonderful show.
Veneno, yeah. It is...
Vimeo, I love.
I've only watched, I think, 3 episodes because it is... It's a lot. Like, I cry too hard in it and from
it's
it an and afterwards.
But it also has, like, wonderful humor and joy and everything. It's not just sad.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. It's just... It's one of those things that's like, this is not just television. I mean,
did you watch the latest three episodes of Search Party?
Well, I've seen the most recent one. I've seen 4.
No, there's 6 out. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Well, I saw whenever she turns around and gets hit in the face by Cole. She like walks out of the room and sees the Barbie dolls. Oh, that's not the most recent one, Jeremy says. So,
oh, no, there's more.
But Cole
more.
Is doing, I mean, I texted
actually,
Cole
now
about
I'm trying
it.
To
like,
think what happens.
I mean,
oh,
it's,
so you didn't see them, go
really
to the
funny.
Pastry factory?
Are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear
I'm
you.
Here.
Yeah.
Did you see the pastry factory?
No. I'm only at the point where they've decided to go look for her.
Oh, you're in for a treat. You're in for such a treat. My God. It's a great show. And whoever's doing, again, the art team is tremendous.
The props,
the
styling?
The costumes, the sets. No, all of it. The whole artistic design team
all of
is
Matthew
nailing
Simonelli,
it.
Shout
love
out.
You.
Love her. So fierce. Maybe we should have her on the pod sometime. I mean, whenever we get to having people on this again, when we feel like, okay, let's...
Oh my gosh, would love to have Matthew on the pod.
Whenever we get to there, it's going to be...
We only have 1 minute left to talk.
Well, guess what? It's my birthday on February 1st. And, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to send me a gift, find a way. And, that's my ad.
Please don't send it to me so that I then have to repost it.
Don't. Please do not send it.
Because that is... Although, thank you to whoever did send Jack that gorgeous thing and didn't give me anything, but still.
That was incredible. But I will get you my address of where I am upstate, or Reed can get it to you. And yeah, that's that.
Okay, 20, let's see.
That's the end of this
20,
episode.
20, 19, 18, 17, 16, 15, 14. Well, it's 13, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Goodbye, we love you.
Zero.
Bye.
Hi, Dance and Stuff listeners. This is Margaret Fuhrer. I'm the editor and producer of the Dance Edit podcast. Like you, we love Reed and Jack over at the Dance Edit, and if you get especially excited when they turn into journalists and do reporting, we think you might like our podcast too. The Dance Edit podcast is a weekly dance news show. It's hosted by me and three other editors from Dance Media. We work on Dance Magazine and Dance Spirit and Point. And every Thursday, we discuss and sometimes yell a little bit about the week's top dance news stories, and then we interview one of the dance artists who's shaping the news. And our recent interview guests have actually included a few Dance and Stuff friends. We've had Kyle Abraham, we've had Lloyd Knight. Basically, we've built a nice little nerdy community, and we hope you'll join it. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts and at thedanceedit.com/podcast.